presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I don't know if you feel this way, but I find myself, now that we're kind of mid-June, you know, heading towards July, I find my college football reading getting a little bit more serious this time of year, and I find when I kind of dig in on a subject, I find myself diving a little deeper on it than I probably would have, say, 3 or 4 weeks ago. To me, it starts to feel like the season's getting a lot closer. Certainly the start of practice is getting a lot closer, and I kind of dug deep on something yesterday in preparation for today's show, and ultimately what I found was maybe a little bit of a surprise for me. I'll explain why, but I want to start with DeAndre Swift, and I want to start by saying that I think there's an expectation that some of the national media seemingly have for Swift that I think could end up maybe being wrong. And it's not a bad thing necessarily, it's just different than some might believe. I love lists. I make no apology for that. If you rank anything in college football, I will read your list, I will talk about your list, and I'll probably then make my own list as a response to what you put out there. You rank teams, you rank players, you rank coaches, you rank anything. I just like that kind of stuff this time of year because I like college football conversations. Well, USA Today has been ranking the various position groups around college football. They ranked their running backs recently, and they put DeAndre Swift as the number 3 back in the country behind Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin and Travis Etienne from Clemson. That's not a huge surprise one way or another. You may say, well, I think that Swift's better than both those guys, and he very well may end up proving that over the course of the season, but in some form or fashion, the 3 top backs in the country, for the most part, are considered to be Swift, along with Taylor, who gets a ton of carries at Wisconsin, and Travis Etienne, who obviously was on the national champion and played pretty big in some big games for Clemson a year ago. But it is what the writer at USA Today, Paul Meyerberg, says about DeAndre Swift in ranking him number 3 in his list of running backs that I thought was the most interesting, and I think this sets us up for a pretty interesting conversation here today. Here's what Meyerberg writes about Swift, his number 3 back. He says that Swift's talent has outweighed his touches across his first 2 years with the Bulldogs, though his production saw a significant uptick across the second half of last season. And I may even say, really, it's more the final third of the season, maybe more so than the second half, but nonetheless, that's essentially true. Meyerberg then goes on to say he's in line for even more carries as a junior. Now, I want to park on that sentence right there in particular, that DeAndre Swift is in line for even more carries as a junior than he had as a sophomore. This would seem to be obvious, right? I mean, there were 5 games a year ago where Swift had fewer than 10 carries. He didn't have 20 carries in any game a season ago. And we have been left to assume that part of the reason why there were games, especially early in the season, when Swift didn't get a lot of work is because he was a little banged up, a little injured. Now, Georgia has guarded the secret of DeAndre Swift's groin like the United States guards its nuclear secrets. There's some conflicting information here. Go back to November, Kirby Smart after the Auburn game, essentially disregarding any thought of the groin surgery that at that point in time the beat writers around the program had become aware of. Kirby Smart disregarding that as any factor at all in why Swift was lightly used near the beginning of the season. For some context, here is Kirby then.
He may tell you that. I don't know. I mean, he had the surgery over the spring, and that was something that he recovered from over the summer. And he really came to fall camp and was moving around well. He had a setback in fall camp a couple times that it bothered him, and I think it bothered him early in the season some. But DeAndre's always been a competitor, works hard, he plays for the big moment, does a really good job. But I think the surgery was during the spring.
So he acknowledges a setback and acknowledges maybe that was bothering him a little bit at the beginning of the season. But Kirby Smart, to my knowledge, never at any point in time last year said the reason why we're not giving him very many carries in September and October is because of the fact that he's still battling this groin injury and he's not fully 100%. Now, Kirby, as a head coach, I guess, you know, he has a right. It's his prerogative to kind of keep some of this injury stuff a little bit secret. But it seemed like Smart at times was especially secretive when it came to Swift's status from a year ago. DeAndre Swift, for what it's worth, was more forthcoming. In fact, he talked to Mike Griffith before the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans and went into pretty great detail about just all the extra work that he was doing to make sure he was fully healthy. The best of DeAndre that we saw in November, apparently that became possible because of the rigorous schedule that Swift followed to make sure his body was in tip-top shape by the time you got to that point. Here is Swift in his own words.
Just getting back healthy was a big thing for me because I know when I'm healthy, like I said, the sky's the limit for me.
How involved was it? How many days a week were you in the training room?
What time every day of the week. Wake up at 6 o'clock, go get treatment before I had to go to class. I would go to tutoring, come back and get treatment. I had to go back to class, come back and get treatment before practice. So it was an ongoing process, daily thing. But I know what I had to do to get back onto the field because nobody likes being injured.
So DeAndre Swift says nobody likes being injured, so I'm doing the work necessary to make sure I'm fully healthy. And the assumption I'm going to make here is in 2019 that groin injury is a thing of the past. And despite the fact that Robert Edwards, the great former Georgia running back, told us this spring that Swift was dealing with a little bit of an ankle during spring practice, my assumption is that DeAndre Swift is going to be fully healthy for the 2019 season, which would bring back to what Paul Meyerberg said a little earlier. That means he's in line for even more carries. However, here's where I think, based on some recent stats for Georgia, you might have to pump the brakes on this a little bit. I mentioned a moment ago that Swift didn't have 20 carries in any game last year. But you know what I was kind of surprised to go back and find? And for some reason, I just assumed the numbers on this would be different, but they weren't. I went back and looked at the 2017 season for Georgia, which is the high water mark for Kirby thus far as UGA coach. Of those two great backs that Georgia had that season, DeAndre Swift obviously been the third, but of the two leading backs that Georgia had that season, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, do you realize that only one of them had 20 carries in any game all season long? That was Nick Chubb, and he only reached the 20-carry mark in one game that season. It was against South Carolina. So every other game in 2017, which would seem to be the blueprint for Georgia offensive success because Georgia won the SEC, made the college football playoff, every game that year, both Chubb and Michelle finished with fewer than 20 carries except for one, which kind of sets you up for a situation in 2019, that the assumption that now that DeAndre Swift's fully healthy, now that he's not dealing with a groin injury anymore, he's ready to get a whole lot more carries. He's ready to put a number on that, ready to start getting 20-plus carries a game. Recent Georgia history in terms of how it's used its running backs would suggest that's not the case, because prior to 2017, both Chubb and Michelle had plenty of games where they carried it more than 20 times. Under Kirby Smart in 2016, Chubb especially, for Sony Michel in 2015 when Chubb got hurt, he carried more than 20 times in a game several times. To go back to 2014, once again a Mark Richt year, Chubb had some games where he carried it more than 30 times. But under Kirby Smart in 2017, the load was a lot more balanced, which would suggest that in 2019, even with a fully healthy DeAndre Swift, you may see a similar degree of balance where Swift is fully healthy and fully utilized, but maybe not to the tune of 20 carries a game, which puts an extra spotlight on Georgia this season, on the other running backs, guys like Zamir White, for instance, guys like Brian Herrien, for instance. Now, the good news is there's a lot of indication that they may be ready for that spotlight moment. I'll take you back to the spring here for a moment. Do you remember the post-game show we did at the UGA bookstore with the former Georgia linebacker Natrez Patrick? Natrez Patrick, when I asked him about, I guess you haven't seen Zamir White, but what do you expect when you do see him? I thought that Natrez Patrick gave a very interesting answer to that question. Here's what Natrez said at the time.
But I have. So let me tell you, the spring, right before he got injured, so he was practicing. I think he got injured in the end of his first spring, towards the end of his first spring. And when I tell you, he ripped us apart, literally, like, so hard to tackle. No one could tackle him one-on-one. Like, because he actually did a couple scrimmages. I think he did the first scrimmage, maybe the second scrimmage.
This would have been August.
Of course, yeah. And we could not tackle him. Like, couldn't bring him down, and he ran really tough. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do to people in the opposite color jersey. So I can't wait, man. I'm glad his recovery is going well.
Yeah.
I hope that he'll be back soon.
So listen, Natrez Patrick's a proud guy. He was a good linebacker of this program, and his other fellow defensive starters are proud guys as well. When he says Zamir White ripped us apart and we couldn't tackle him one-on-one, Natrez Patrick, if he's saying that, I'm going to take him at his word. And Kirby Smart has also said that that guy, the one that Natrez said couldn't be tackled, is now cleared for practice and will be a part of full contact stuff when Georgia kicks off its summer practices later on this summer. Zamir White, I believe, is going to be a big part of the Georgia running game this season to go as a complement to DeAndre Swift, not necessarily in a secondary role, but as I said before, kind of a complementary role. And I think that Brian Herrien's got a big part in this as well. He's the veteran. He's been biding his time. His recruiting profile, not quite as robust as Swift's or White, but he may be a pretty good player himself. In fact, Kirby Smart alluded to that very point after G-Day once again back in April. Here's more from the coach.
Brian's a good back. Brian's gotten better. I mean, I've seen Brian, not necessarily this spring, but I've seen, I mean, you got to remember, he's been here for
several springs. And one of those springs, he carried the ball 20, 30 times when Nick and Sony were coming back as seniors. So I've seen a lot of body of work from Ryan. He's got really good skill set of catching the ball. He's got a good understanding of our offense. And I thought he was really productive today.
So listen, let me kind of wrap all of this up here for a moment. I really believe that the Georgia running game in 2019 is not going to be DeAndre Swift as the superstar getting 75% of the carries. I think it's more of an, I don't want to say evenly distributed, but more closer to even distribution between Zamir White, DeAndre Swift, and Brian Herrien. But here was the surprising thing about some of the research I did yesterday. Georgia's going to really need that, because when you look at teams like, say, Clemson, for instance, balanced rushing attack is a lot more a part of their offensive profile than I kind of realized. Travis Etienne gets a lot of the highlights for them, and obviously Trevor Lawrence is a well-regarded quarterback, but their number two running back, Lynn J. Dixon, last year averaged nearly 9 yards per carry, and I would say that he's probably in line for more carries here this season. So when it comes to a stable of running backs, unfortunately, Clemson's probably got one of those as well. And when it comes to Georgia's pursuit of a national championship, being that good in that regard is going to be really important. Being better than Alabama, who's going to put guys like Brian Robinson in a bigger role than he's been in before in his Alabama career, that comparison is going to go on as well. We certainly expect the rushing attack to be a big part of the story of how Georgia succeeds or not here in 2019. But it's not just DeAndre Swift who's going to be leading the way in that regard. It's going to be that collection of Georgia running backs, and I'm really curious to see how all of this plays out. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Enjoyed being on the radio with them this morning, as I do each and every Wednesday morning. And, of course, podcast form, Apple, Google, the world-famous DogNation.com. Just great to have you with all of that. By the way, go to DogNation.com right now and find out more information about our Dog Nation Days of Summer. We're still basking in the glow of what happened last week. And looking ahead now to Thursday, August 1st, Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. What an incredible event this is going to be as the next big phase of Dog Nation Days of Summer rolls on. Mountains of North Georgia, Towns County, could not be more beautiful. Very, very close to Lake Chetuk. This is a great getaway. Many of you have already booked your rooms. You've kind of gotten in our VIP experience. We've got a limited number of those spots left. So go to DogNation.com and find out more information about that. If you don't mind, I want to kind of keep the running back conversation going here for a moment as we transition to our Around the Doghouse, brought to you today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, who, by the way, are going to be hanging out with us later on in our Dog Nation World Headquarters a little bit later on. Get a chance to have lunch with those folks today, and I cannot wait for that. But on the subject of Around the Doghouse presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today, let me talk about something that Jeff Sintel put yesterday in the Dog Nation Forum. You can find the forum at forum.dognation.com. And Jeff told us this yesterday when he was with us on the program, that a lot of those like recruiting nuggets, he's starting to kind of populate in there. The great news is the forum's completely free, so just simply go and read some of this stuff. But I wanted to highlight something in particular for a moment involving Tank Bigsby, a running back from the state of Georgia, one of the top players in the country, but a guy whose relationship with Georgia has been a little bit hard to decipher. Is Georgia interested in him? Is Bigsby interested in Georgia? Sometimes it's not completely clear. But here's what Jeff reported yesterday on the Dog Nation Forum. He says that Tank Bigsby will be in Athens today on an unofficial visit. This would have been yesterday. This was Jeff from the forum yesterday. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with UGA and Bigsby over the summer and early fall cycle here. Others recruit the nation's number 8 running back and number 50 overall prospect harder. He means other programs are more in on Bigsby seemingly than Georgia is. But Jeff says somewhat cryptically, if Georgia opts to make him a true priority, who knows what could happen? That's what Jeff Sintel wrote in the Dog Nation Forum yesterday. Last week on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, the subject of Bigsby also came up there, and here's what Jeff said out loud as a part of that program.
I don't even grow tired of waiting. I think Bigsby, there's some concern about his top-end speed, how overall fast he is. And then the other concern is he's just not that big 210-pound back that Georgia's looking for. Zachary Evans is not either, but then he has the lethal game-breaking speed as well. I just think Tank Bigsby, we say this a lot with Tank, and it should not come across as an insult, that he's clearly one of the nation's top 10 running backs this year. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's exactly what Georgia wants when it tries to take its first pick out of the backs available to Georgia in this country.
So I think it's interesting what Jeff says there at the end. Bigsby's not what Georgia wants when it takes its first pick of the backs. But Kendall Milton, who was on campus this past weekend and greatly entertained by Georgia, that may be more of an example of UGA's first pick on this. For those of you who watch the show or listen to the show regularly, you know I'm a big believer that Georgia needs two elite backs for the cycle. Would Bigsby be willing to be a tandem partner along with Kendall Milton if someone like, say, Zachary Evans is just simply not willing to share the spotlight there in that regard? I think things get really interesting in relationship to that discussion, especially given the fact that one of the programs recruiting him hard is South Carolina is seemingly also recruiting him to be part of a tandem. They've got the commitment of Marshawn Lloyd. This is a subject that I'm not going to let go of. I do think Georgia needs that second elite back. I'd love for it to be Zachary Evans, but I like Tank Bigsby too. I think this one's going to be fun to watch as Georgia tries to fill a need. After this year, they'll need elite running backs, and Bigsby would seem to, in a lot of ways, fit the bill on that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And this time of year, when you're outside, you see those cracks in the foundation, or you're down in your basement. My kids love to play in ours. And if you ever notice that, like, wet spot or damp stuff, you know, moisture creeping through your house, affecting the structural integrity of your home, can be a serious issue. That's why you want to trust a serious company to help you with that, one that has a full-time engineer on staff. It's why Dog Nation Daily recommends Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And the great news is getting in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia could not be easier. The phone number is simply 678-ESOG-NOW. That number, once again, 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, I got a lot more coming up later on in the program, including an interesting look around the SEC. But for now, on what was a big day for the Georgia Bulldogs off the football field yesterday, let's talk to our buddy Mike Griffith.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith joins us here on Dog Nation Daily. And obviously, Mike, there is a lot of regular football stuff that I want to talk to you about while we have you on the phone here. But I do want to begin our discussion by talking about what happened yesterday. For those who are maybe not aware, although by now many Georgia fans are, the Georgia team spends some time each year at a camp called Camp Sunshine. Now, Camp Sunshine takes place in Rutledge, Georgia at a facility called Camp Twin Lakes. I've been lucky enough to be at Camp Twin Lakes a lot in the past because Camp Sunshine's not the only camp that it serves. It serves a lot of camps for children who have extra medical needs. It's a facility set up to handle that. But Camp Sunshine may be among the most famous there. And it's a personal connection for Kirby Smart because of his brother's Carl and the leukemia that he's dealt with. And, you know, Mike, I see the video that you've shot. I've seen a lot of the things that that Georgia's put out on this. And to say that it's moving is an understatement. Obviously, you know, you and I both have kids. I have young kids right now. So this is particularly poignant for me to see some of the families who are dealing with this and battling with this. Let me just start by asking just kind of a simple question. What's it like to be there in person, and what's it like to experience this in kind of a up close and personal manner?
It's really hard. It's, you know, it's a unique experience, BA. And, you know, the thing that overcomes or overwhelms you isn't the despair. Even though you realize that a lot of these kids are going through things that are, you know, more difficult than, you know, we can imagine, things that, as you said, we fear for our own children. But the strength and the positive, I mean, you just, I'm struggling to explain it because, you know, these kids are so strong and so positive. It's absolutely overwhelming. It's you know, I struggle to draw an analogy. It's like that football fan that's team is down by 4 touchdowns and they still believe they're going to win, and they're still having a good time at the game. And these kids, it's like Mo was saying, that the one of the founders and the organizer said, you know, these kids take the same approach into every day that Kirby preaches for his football team, as far as don't ever give up, fight till the end, stay positive, play for one another. I mean, it's really happening. It's 13 and 12 and 15-year-olds that I'm listening to their testimony. You know, I'll just say this. I'm going to write a story. But I was talking to a 13-year-old leukemia survivor, and I asked him what it meant for the Georgia football players to be there. And he said, you know, it means a lot. He said, it means to a lot of my friends that have just been diagnosed or that are going through the treatments. It's really good for them. You know, he was excited for himself, but his thought was how the Georgia football players were helping his teammates, his friends.
Yeah.
I mean, for a 13-year-old to have that awareness and level of understanding for others that are going through a difficult time, it was a perspective I just didn't expect to hear that from a 13-year-old. And, really, it really warmed my heart.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I heard something that Kirby Smart said yesterday where he talked about how, and he almost said this, semi-tongue-in-cheek, about the fact that, he talks about adversity all the time and his team battling adversity, but the kind of adversity that Kirby Smart talks about is not real-world adversity. It's simply within the confines of the white lines of a football field, whereas on the other hand, the young children and the families of those children who attend Camp Sunshine, they are dealing with real adversity. They are dealing with real potential distractions, and yet their ability, and I thought you just described it very well, their ability to respond to that and truly, to use another Kirby Smart cliche, keep the main thing, living life to the fullest, enjoying every step of that. It ought to be inspiring to all of us, and it's the kind of thing that I do think really, and it's hard to say this without it sounding just, kind of trite, but it really is the way that life is supposed to be lived, and I think there is something to be learned by watching people just soak up every moment of life and maintain a spirit of gratitude. That's the kind of thing that we can very easily forget about because of some of the petty things that we worry about from time to time. What a stark reminder that some of the folks that you had a chance to interact with yesterday can provide.
No doubt. And watching the Georgia players interact was was also impressive. They're out there. They're volunteering. They didn't have to go out there. I think there were 54 guys that went out there. One, it was interesting to see which players chose to go out there, who was there, and then to watch them interact. And let me tell you, when they played that dodgeball game, and there's a short video in my story, they weren't holding back. I mean, those kids, but those balls were going 60 miles an hour. I mean, that was a honest-to-goodness real-life dodgeball game, and it didn't matter who had what, and the kids loved it. They absolutely loved it. They got James Cook's best, okay, and Tyreek Stevenson. And I mean, and let me tell you, it was fun watching those guys out there and their athleticism. The way that Tyreek and Cook are, I'm thinking to myself, these are two of the fastest, quickest human beings on the planet right now, playing dodgeball right in front of me. Seriously, if you were to play an honest to goodness world dodgeball tournament, these would be two of the best when you look at Cook's quickness and change of directions. And all I can say about Tyreek Stevens, I can see why they call him Tyreek the Freak. I mean, the guys had an impromptu dunk session yesterday. It was quite a show, and the kids were right in the middle of it. I mean, that dodgeball game was real, and it was fun to watch. And some of the kids even hit some of the players. The players weren't looking, or they'd get distracted with one another. I mean, it was on, and it was fun.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, Mike. I appreciate those stories. Let me say one more thing about this before we kind of change the subject. There is a way to be cynical about everything, and I'm sure for some there's maybe even a way to be cynical about this and say, oh, well, this is just good publicity for the Georgia football team. I would counter that, though, Mike, by saying that what this really is good publicity for the camp itself. Georgia football has an incredible brand, incredible cachet, and anything that the Georgia team does is going to get a lot of notice, a lot of attention. When Kirby Smart and these Georgia players choose to be at this place, the media is going to follow, yourself included. It would not surprise me at all to find out that Georgia's appearance at Camp Sunshine, and for the Camp Twin Lakes facility overall, which hosts a lot of different camps, I've been there, I've seen it with my own eyes, it would not surprise me to find out that appearance from Georgia yesterday is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to that facility.
Right.
It could not operate without the generous donations of the people who have just noticed it and paid attention to it. There are a lot of things that people can be benevolent towards, a lot of ways for philanthropic dollars to be spent. This is an attention game, and Georgia using its fame to give attention to Camp Sunshine yesterday. I really think that's an incredibly generous act on the part of this football program, Kirby Smart included.
Well, I mean, it's personal for Kirby. His brother went through it, and Kirby's family benefited from social funds as his brother was going through it. And now it's Kirby's, program. And he, like I said, he doesn't make those players go out there. They go out there on their own. They know it means a lot to their football coach, and Kirby means a lot to them, right? But then once they go out there, and there's a video, Charlie Warner talks about it, how when he went out there as a freshman, I mean, yes, we're all you know, listening, watching, oh, yes, we know there's people with cancer. We know they're out there. But until you're in the middle of it, until you're in the middle of Camp Sunshine, until you're in the midst of the people and you're meeting them and you're shaking their hand and you're hearing their stories, you're taking their time to hear their testimony, you know, it's different. It's like traveling somewhere. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I know that there's, you know, snow up north. Well, until you're in a snowstorm, until you're in the blizzard, you don't really understand what it's really all about. And I would say the same for this camp. And so from the publicity, I would agree with you. I mean, yes, they raised $295,000 yesterday because of a race that was held there. Kirby's foundation gives to this. Obviously, his family's been touched by it because when there's one person with cancer in the family, it affects the whole family. It affects the whole community, for that matter. So in the sense of, yes, fundraising, but also from an educational standpoint, you know, once, you know, Jake Fromm had a great quote. He said, you know, you put days like this in the memory banks and it helps you get through the tough days. It puts things in perspective and it makes you realize how fortunate you are that you don't have to overcome some of the things that these young people are dealing with or had to overcome in their life. They're, you know, 13, you know, 8, 15 years old. So I thought Fromm put it into perspective. It's just a win-win all the way around, and I can't believe anyone would, you know, find any reason to be cynical about it. Listen, Georgia's football image doesn't need any help. It is what it is. It's the biggest. It's the best in the Southeastern Conference. The power of the G is a global brand. Everybody knows what Georgia's all about. This is more personal. This is more about helping families and educating young people and giving them a really valuable perspective, you know, BA, because, you know, it's like when you're on that scary plane flight, right? How many of us have been on that flight and say, oh, my gosh, I said my prayers, and it kind of puts things into perspective quickly. And so I think it's as educational, and I think it's as much about the families as it is anything else.
Let me talk to you about a couple football-related things here before we let you go. One of the things we made a big deal on our show about yesterday was a comment that David Pollack, the former UGA great, gave to you about the Georgia defense and his challenge, so to speak, for the group to be more dominant in 2019. And, Mike, the point I made yesterday was if you go back and look at Kirby Smart's defenses the last couple of years, it's safe to say that these defenses have stopped short of being dominant in both of the last 2 years. Georgia's only been in the top 10 in one major category, really in any regard, the last two seasons when they were, I think, sixth in the country in points allowed in 2017. Otherwise, we're talking about top 12, top 15 type stuff. You know, the advanced metrics kind of tell a similar story and all of that. I believe this program's recruited enough now where there's an upgrade in talent compared to previous years. But do you, based on what you saw this spring and the conversations you've had, do you believe this group now has the kind of talent necessary to use Pollack's word and go out and dominate as a defense this season?
Yeah, there's more talent, especially on the back end. And really the most telling comments I got about this BA were from Mel Tucker. You know, when Dog Nation went out there, I went out there to cover the national championship game, and Mel Tucker spoke out there, and he was telling me that a lot of the things that he and Kirby put in for the defense early on and in these first few years were out of necessity. Okay, they wanted to do more. But like any good coaching staff, you've got to play to your talent. And that's not to say that Mark Richt didn't have talent. Obviously, he had talent. He had the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, Roquan Smith. But it was recruited slightly differently, right? It was a machine, but the machine was put together a little, you know, a Mercedes and a BMW. They're put together a little differently. There's great engineering in both. But now Kirby's been able to recruit the players and the parts that fit his system, to your point. And so, yes, we are going to see the Georgia defense continue to evolve. And, yes, a lot of what they were doing before defensively was out of necessity. And so what Kirby did, which I thought was brilliant, the thing that gets overlooked that I want to keep bringing up, it's so important, and I don't have the exact numbers here in front of me, BA, but, you know, Kirby knew that he wasn't going to have the most sacks and the most TFLs. He didn't have that type of front seven to work with these last 2 years. So he said, okay, We're going to make sure we don't give up the big play. Yeah. And if you go back and look, you know, Georgia gave up the fewest plays over 25 yards of any team in the country. And it was like a staggering number. It was like Georgia gave up like 23 plays over 25 yards and like Florida and LSU gave up 58. I mean, you did not beat Georgia with one play. It was very hard to beat Georgia for a big gain of over 20 yards. You had to sustain. You had to execute. You had to avoid turnovers. You had to convert third downs. It took what LSU did, four fourth down conversions, to make the Georgia defense not look good. Okay, the odds are against, I don't think we'll ever see a team ever go 4-for-4 on fourth down against Kirby Smart again in his entire career. What else? And give LSU credit. And it was a unique situation. They were all very short. But that was what broke Georgia's back. That's what it took to break Georgia's back last year, even though they did not have a dominant defense. And in the end, what it took was DeAndre Walker going down and then not having a qualified backup. Brenton Cox was not ready. He had still not learned his lesson about contain. Walker tried to help him with it earlier in the year. We all remember that exchange where, you know, where he pushed him, and Cox erupted like a young person does at times. And I asked somebody after the game, he said, yeah, the kid wasn't containing. It was against MTSU. They converted some third downs. And so, you know, that freshman was not ready for the moment against Alabama. That's not going to happen moving forward. There's going to be more depth, to your point, B.A. So, yes, I do think we're going to see more dominant numbers. But I don't want to undersell what Kirby was able to do last year, even without the type of personnel that he really wanted and needed to run what he wants to do.
Let me squeeze in one final thing before we let you go. I talked running backs before you joined us, and the point that I made was some of the national media expect DeAndre Swift to get significantly more carries this season than he had a year ago, but the story in 2017 would suggest that's not necessarily the case. Nick Chubb had one game with 20 carries in 2017, but he or Sonny Michel didn't have that many carries in any other game that season. 2018, kind of a similar story, although Swift was somewhat hobbled by the groin injury. My expectation is there's more of a balanced situation when it comes to the Georgia running backs this year, and Swift probably finished the season with fewer carries than some national writers that maybe don't know the program quite as well might expect. Where would you land on a conversation like that?
Yeah, I think more touches. Not a ton more touches, but more touches, because I think they're going to throw to the backside of the backfield, and I think Swift can really hurt you in that way. And what that does is it neutralizes the blitz. It neutralizes the rush. And right now with Georgia's quarterback situation the way it is, you know, you really got to protect Jake. As it was, Jake got hit fewer times than any quarterback in the SEC last year. That's documented. He'll get hit even less this year, not just because of the great protection and the great offensive line and the strong run game that's going to put Georgia in positive down and distance situations, but also because his ability to throw the ball to the running backs. And I think Swift's going to be a big part of that. There were some games early on, and unbeknownst to us, you know, DeAndre told me after the season that he actually hurt his foot against South Carolina. So in addition to the groin, there was a foot injury against South Carolina that we didn't even know about at the time. We did know that he had limited carries against MTSU, and Kirby kind of played that off at the time. But, you know, DeAndre Swift really wasn't healthy until that foot had time to rest during the bye week LSU game. And then you saw what he did in November. He was unbelievable in November. I mean, he looked as good as any running back. In fact, Georgia football was playing as good as any team in the country in the month of November. And teams ebb and flow. Some programs don't understand that. Clemson likes to believe they were just as good in September as January. It's kind of ridiculous. But teams do ebb and flow. And when Swift was at his best, Georgia was at their best. And right now, we've got a healthy Swift. He was out there yesterday. I was watching him closely. And he looked good. And, I mean, he looked really solid. Cut, moving around well. I mean, he was out there on the basketball court. I mean, he was moving very well. Swift is, he's primed and ready. And so I don't know from a number standpoint, but I do think you're going to see more DeAndre Swift on top 10 plays of the day. I think you're going to see him hit more home runs, because he's had a completely healthy offseason. And to your point, I think we're going to see Brian Herrian. I think we're going to see James Cook. And we'll see Zamir White's carries increase as the year goes on. And who knows about Kenny McIntosh. But I do think we'll see more Swift highlights. So it may appear that he's getting more work, only because I expect him to have more big plays.
I think it's a really interesting point, Mike, and a great way to finish up our conversation. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more from you at DogNation.com in the days ahead. We appreciate your coverage from Rutledge, Georgia yesterday. And we'll also enjoy speaking to you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon, too.
Thanks, B. I appreciate it, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So Mike said two things right there that I think are really important to bring up. One is more serious, one is completely unserious, and yet I think also very fun. First of all, on the subject of DeAndre Swift, you know, we have been in the TV era for Heisman candidates for a long time. You know, I'm a child of kind of the 90s. That's when I really came into my own as a college football fan, late 80s, early 90s. And back then, it's, you know, who made ESPN? That's who got that Heisman attention. Did you get featured on the show where, you know, the late night college football scoreboard show? And if you did, you're kind of in that Heisman conversation. I think the highlight world now, though, is a little bit less about TV and a little bit more about Twitter. The stuff that gets tweeted out, the stuff that gets gets shared on social media. And I think even with a limited number of carries, because Swift is kind of a spectacular player, because he does have a little bit of a flair for the dramatic with the way that he runs the ball, I think that he could potentially get enough highlights even with limited carries. And I mean limited in comparison to Jonathan Taylor, who Wisconsin's just going to wear down to the nub. I think that Swift can kind of stay in that conversation among running backs because of the highlight way in which he runs. Go back and watch the Alabama game as an instance, for instance, on this. Go back and watch the Kentucky game as a for instance on this. Now, I know that J.J. Holloman was ear-holing some would-be tacklers that opened up Swift on some of that kind of stuff, but Swift still had kind of a spectacular run. I think Mike's right about that his highlights will tell the story, even in comparison to probably less prolific numbers. Jonathan Taylor had, I think, 2,000 yards a year ago. I mean, Wisconsin will just wear its running backs out. Georgia, by comparisons, simply not going to do that. The other thing that Mike brings up, and I'll be quick on this, but I think it's worth pointing out because I think it's funny. If dodgeball was an Olympic sport, and, you know, Georgia yesterday, dodgeball is kind of one of the traditions as part of the Camp Sunshine deal there at Camp Twin Lakes in Rutledge, Georgia. They always seem to play dodgeball. If dodgeball was an Olympic sport, some of the guys that Mike mentioned, you know, a James Cook and some of those others, Tyreek Stevenson, maybe DeAndre Swift as well. If you're going to put together like the 12 best Olympic-level dodgeball players, I would think that a couple of Georgia players would have to at least be candidates in that. Now, I don't know how much service time they have in trying to become dodgeball players, but my guess is some of those guys would be pretty good in the dodgeball realm of things if they ever choose to get real serious about it. Of course, if you, I guess, read some of the studies as of late, maybe that's also kind of an impressive, oppressive bullying-type sport now. But nonetheless, if dodgeball's still sanctioned in 10 or 15 years, some of these Georgia guys would probably be pretty good Olympic-style athletes when it came to that. I think that's a pretty good point for Mike. Now, before we do the SEC through, let me tell you about my friends at Kroger here for a moment, which today launches a Kroger Fuel VIP program that allows customers to earn 2 fuel points on purchases instead of just one. So that's a great new upgrade there from our friends at Kroger. Really good stuff. Enrollment is also super easy. You can scan the barcode at checkout, or you can enroll online. Let me give the website here. It's Kroger.com/FuelVIP. Now, credit to you if you can spell fuel right on the first try. It's F-U-E-L. Kroger.com/FuelVIP. Enrollment, annual enrollment is just $40, and it's well worth it because you get 2 fuel points for every $1 spent. That's a great deal from our friends at Kroger, and I wanted to make sure you were aware of that today. All right, to start off our SEC through, I want to say something, and I know this is going to come across like propaganda, but I think I'm more right than wrong on this. Longtime Tuscaloosa News columnist Cecil Hurt was on the Paul Feinbaum show this week. I don't know if we have this screen grab, this tweet or not, from the Feinbaum show about that. But what Cecil Hurt essentially said was, yeah, here's the quote. I think this is very interesting. Cecil Hurt knows the program. He's been in Tuscaloosa seemingly forever. He says on Feinbaum, Nick Saban has probably spent more time this summer thinking about a team that's not on the schedule officially than about anybody who are. That's a reference to the situation at Clemson, because Clemson just beat Alabama badly in the national championship game a year ago. Now, here's my point, and this is going to come across like propaganda, and yet I believe I'm right about this. If Alabama really is obsessed with Clemson, as Cecil Hurt suggests they are, I think that's a huge opportunity for Georgia. I do. Because it almost comes across as if Alabama thinks Georgia's in its rearview mirror because it's beaten them 2 years in a row. Yet anybody who watched those games knows how razor-thin the margin in both of them were. Credit to Alabama, they were on the right side of that edge. But nonetheless, these were incredibly close games. And Georgia, from a recruiting standpoint, from an on-field standpoint, it's proven that it's incredibly close to winning. So if Alabama's that obsessed with Clemson, they may get snuck up on by Georgia before they realize. Now, it's fair to point out, somebody who's not a Georgia fan may say, yeah, well, B.A., the same thing could happen for Georgia as well. It's obsessed with Alabama right now. Y'all talk about Alabama every day on Dog Nation Daily. That's what, you know, an Alabama fan might say. What about somebody sneaking up on Georgia? Here's where I think that situation's a little bit different. The teams that would be most likely to sneak up on Georgia, a team like Florida, y'all, they're not sneaking. They're loud as they can be. Noisy, obnoxious, as you might expect Gators fans to be. Making a big ruckus. And, you know, Kirby Smart has said over and over again in response to this, he meaning his team, we are going to do our talking with our helmets. So there is no Florida sneak up on Georgia here because Florida has been loud, obnoxious, and kind of, you know, overrating itself for the entirety of the offseason. So Florida will get Georgia's full attention come the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And a program like Auburn, who might be a little more of a quiet offseason, I've been telling y'all since the winter that I thought that Auburn was Georgia's most dangerous game. So to the extent that my microphone holds any sway or influence whatsoever, I've been touting Auburn as a dangerous game there for a while. Teams like, say, Tennessee or South Carolina or somebody like that, honestly, they are not a threat to Georgia yet because they don't have enough talent to do that. But I think that the would-be sneak-ups on Georgia are a lot more difficult to conjure up than the idea that Georgia could sneak up on Alabama while it's heavily focused on Clemson. Y'all watch and see if this happens. If it is true that Alabama is that singularly focused and obsessed with Clemson, that is bad news for them come first Saturday in December if they even make the game. One more SEC through story I want to get to here. I mentioned off the top of the show USA Today's ranking of its top running backs in college football. DeAndre Swift came in at number 3 on that list. Believe it or not, there was only one other SEC running back on the entire list. It seems a little atypical for the SEC to only have those running backs. Najee Harris was listed as kind of an also-ran, almost made the top 10 from Alabama. But the other SEC back who made the list is Keyshawn Vaughn from Vanderbilt. Now, I will admit that Vaughn kind of sneaks up on me just a little bit, but when you go back and look at his numbers, what a performance for him late in the season a year ago, including a huge, huge game in that wild bowl game that Vanderbilt played against Baylor. So, here's what I think is interesting. When Georgia does play Vanderbilt to start the season, one of the tests that we've had for Georgia in 2019, can it be better with its rush defense? Not great at that a year ago. If it's a dominant defense this season, it's going to prove that by shutting down the run. Well, what better opportunity to prove that than in week one on the road against someone that USA Today calls one of the top 10 running backs in the country? That's a pretty good measuring stick for the Georgia defense, and all of a sudden week one versus Vanderbilt gets a whole lot more fun. We will make that your SEC throw. And before I start taking some of your questions and comments, let me remind you about my friends at Online Trading Academy. You know, investing is one of the most important things that you can do, and the best overall decision you can make when it comes to investing, step one, is to invest in yourself. That means learning about how the markets work. That's where Online Trading Academy comes in, both in the classroom and online, through a variety of trading styles, a spectrum of asset classes. Find them online at tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. I always speak fast. So I want to make sure you're aware. That's trading with a D, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. Check out Online Trading Academy today. All right, as a part of our program, we've been doing this for the most part during the summer. Your questions and comments, we'll do some of that right now. And of course, we'll do even more of those as a part of our R.S. Andrews cool down a little bit later on in the show today. Let me pull up a few of these and we'll kind of get rocking and rolling. I am curious to hear your thoughts about DeAndre Swift, what I started the show with, about, you know, what the balance of rushing attacks will look like for Georgia this season. And in comparison to Clemson, that actually had probably a more balanced rushing attack a year ago than I realized, the importance of Brian Herring, the importance of Zamir White, I think they're greatly magnified here this season. And then something else I hope that you'll take time to weigh in on as part of our comment section today. You know, Jeff reporting that Tank Bigsby was taking an unofficial visit to Georgia yesterday. I've been of the belief that Bigsby, because he's an in-state back, is a popular recruit right now. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of how you think Bigsby could potentially fit into Georgia, his willingness to maybe be a part of a tandem, or just how he stands on his own in comparison to some of the top backs in the country. I'd love to hear from you on that. Matt Rukavina, how about this? And the subject of those secondary running backs for Georgia, those complimentary backs, he said that Zamir White runs for 200 yards against Florida. You know, talk about a happy edition of our post-game show from the field there in Jacksonville. And obviously it's interesting to think about that against, you know, Georgia's hated bitter rival in Florida, but it's also interesting to think about how much better White could be near the end of the season than he might be at the beginning. I do think, even if he's fully cleared to practice and Kirby Smart has kind of said that he would be, I think we'll see more and better of Zamir over the course of the season than we will early in September. I don't think Georgia really needs him at all until week four against Notre Dame. They might not even need him then, depending on what the Irish might be like. But as the season goes on, I do think they're going to take that toy out for a spin. And my guess is, you know, sometime around that Florida game, we see the best of Zamir White. And if it really popped there against the Gators, I'd be plenty happy about that. We'll take more of your comments coming up as part of our R.S. Andrews Cooldown. We do that every day here on Dog Nation Daily on our video channels. And, you know, for those of you who have been saying, well, I don't get a chance to watch the show live, I'd like to interact with you, I think the best way to do that is probably reaching out on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. I love the sort of back and forth interaction we're able to have there on Twitter. I try to respond to everything that I get. So please reach out to me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. We can kind of keep that conversation going. And by the way, speaking of those lousy stinking Gators, it seems like a good enough time to remind you, it has now been 962 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's a number that we think keeps going up for a while. And no, we don't think, as I mentioned before, that Florida's going to do any sneaking up on Georgia this year. Unfortunately for Florida, they've got Georgia's full attention. I think that Georgia comes in ready to steamroll in Jacksonville later on. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We love doing that. We'll see you Dog Nation Days of Summer coming up in August at Brasstown and back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.